Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Noyce, and this is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. Now, on previous episodes of the podcast, you may have heard allusions to the B word and maybe even the odd opinion or bit of data, but so far we've avoided a full discussion about it. This is not the case anymore because this episode is all about Brexit. Now, I'm joined on this episode firstly by Head of Policy and Public Affairs, ACS, a man who would never be caught on camera with a disposable cup, and someone who clearly just wants to get this Brexit podcast done. It's Edward Woodall. Ed, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And my other guest is a former colleague at ACS, who after a stint in the countryside is now the coolest person I know. He is the Chief Executive of the Cold Chain Federation. You may know him on Twitter as Cold Chain Shane. Mr. Shane Brennan, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, good to see you.
Great. So my first question is very simple to both of you. Are you ready for Brexit?
We're ready to tell retailers how to be ready for Brexit. That's the best answer I can give, I think, there.
Good. Okay. So just about as ready as everyone else is.
Indeed,
then.
Yeah.
I think from my point of view, if talking about it made you ready, then we're more than ready. But I think obviously when it comes down to it, you're not ready and you don't know how ready you are until it's actually happening. And that's the biggest problem with preparing for a no deal.
So is this about the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns and
exactly
all of those unknowns?
We're channeling our inner Rumsfeld.
Yeah, excellent. So Shane, one of the big things that we talk about when we're talking about Brexit is we hear a lot about checks at the border, drivers being caught up in all sorts of confusion, red tape, we'll leave without a deal. What are your members telling you about what could happen on October 31st if we're coming out without a deal? Is it just about goods coming into the UK, or is it just as much of a problem with goods going out as well?
Well, probably start by telling you just very quickly who my members are. So the Cold Chain Federation represents the businesses that provide supply chain services to the retail and catering sector. And cold chain, because it's all temperature control, that means frozen and chilled food. In terms of are we ready, there's been lots of focus on how on the goods that move through the border. And actually, when it comes down to it, there's only a very small percentage of the vehicles and businesses that operate the cold chain in the UK that actually do that part of the job.
Right, okay.
So for the vast majority of people that are servicing stores, they aren't necessarily exposed directly to the problem of their vehicles being stuck on the throughput. So their concerns are really about supply chain management, about the availability of space for stockpiling, in inverted commas, whatever that means. And
so it's a dirty word here, Shane. You can't use the word stockpiling.
So really, sort of looking at it in those two ways. The businesses that are exposed to it have had to do a significant, basically are still playing a lot of catch up in terms of what is actually going to be different about the way they operate on the 3rd of November compared to the 31st of October. And there is going to be substantial difference for them.
Yeah, and just picking up on that a bit. So we had the first time we had threat of no deal was earlier this year. When this happened, what was going on behind the scenes in the supply chain for those that are thinking I'm going to be affected by this? What were they doing to prepare, and what was lost as part of that process?
So, in terms of what they were doing to prepare, if you're involved in physically moving vehicles through the border carrying goods, which is the thing, they are the when it comes down to it, Brexit preparations and no deal preparations about how do we avoid the traffic jam. So those are the ones that are most exposed. They were looking at making sure that they had the right driving licences in place, the right registration for their vehicles in place, and the right paperwork in place for the products that they were moving through the border. And that was, going into April, we were really up against time. This was only the conversations about how this was going to work only started between the two sides in about December time. Okay. So we had 3 months to get organised. So we got to the point where we were on going into that last few 24 hours, and things were just going into being in place within that 24 hours.
Okay.
The fundamental difference this time is that we do kind of know where we're going.
So you see that process the first time around, it did help in learning things about this time.
Yeah, because a lot of the things about how it was going to work fell into place at the 11th hour going into the last no deal.
Yeah.
Those fundamentals haven't changed for, 6 months now plus?
Yeah.
So there is an element of understanding. So there's been more opportunity to know the structures than there has been up to now. The problem is that there are still a number of X factors, if you like, the known unknowns that won't actually play out until the time, and that's the thing that we're really controlling for.
And talking about the things that we don't know until it's going to happen, Ed, for retailers, I mean, that's pretty much what the problem is for independents, isn't it? It's that massive uncertainty.
Yeah, huge uncertainty. I think most feedback we get is sort of concern and confusion, which is sort of a reflection of the nation's mood because of everything that's happened in politics. And each day you don't know what's going to happen, and every update's out of date as soon as it's given because something's moved. So great uncertainty. But we try to sort of deliver some clarity around that in some of the briefing and information we've shared with people to think about what the implications are in terms of the trading environment around their store, which largely comes from up the supply chain. As Shane has said, you know, there are businesses that are directly exposed, and they're quite a small number, but it has a huge knock-on effect on everything down the supply chain. So for a retailer, a convenience retailer, the challenge is that the call to action is really to look up the supply chain, talk to them, engage, understand how they're planning and what they're planning to do, and trying to fit in with those plans.
Yeah, and Shane, I guess the answer from the supply chain, for the most part, is going to be there's a certain amount of things that we know that we can put in place, which are going to minimise disruption, but we can't control for everything.
Yeah, so exactly. The mitigation plans, there are mitigation plans on mitigation plans. Depending, one of the crucial things about this is every food line in a convenience store, on a convenience store shelf, has a different supply chain. At some point in the chain, it's got a different entry point.
Yeah.
And each one has to be looked at in its own merits and have different levels of risk exposure. And that's really, and one of the things that I found frustrating in the last year is everyone ringing me and talking to me about what's stockpiling, what's the stockpiling capacity, how does stockpiling lead to mitigating the risk of shortages?
Yeah.
That's never been a true picture of what actually happens in retail. Anyone knows that you could not stockpile everything you needed to keep the country going for a period of time in a warehouse somewhere. That's not how it works. Everything moves through the chain. So stockpiling is a limited tactic available for some businesses.
Yeah.
Some product lines, sorry. And so that's the kind of the rub. So Ed's advice is absolutely the right thing. You have to just ask product by product, what is the likely risk exposure, and make decisions for you in your shop about what are the most priority lines, where are the potential business disruption risks that come from that product by product analysis.
Yeah, and Ed, in the local shop report this year, we did some new research about the space that retailers have in their stores and about some of the issues around product shortages. What's the main message that we've got from that data?
Well, it shows that for convenience retailers, more so than any other retailers in the supply chain, in the grocery supply chain, we're quite exposed in terms of our ability to stockpile. So some 23% of independent retailers have no additional space.
Yeah.
Because they...
And that's space for anything. That's before you start thinking about chilled, frozen, any of those. This is just space on the floor.
Space on the floor, space at the back. And that's because we are, you know, very regularly supplied with fresh goods. We have a high volume of products, high range of products, but low volume in which to stock them. So there's a high turnover in the delivery. And then for those that do have space, it's a very small amount, again, for the same reason. So it's about 150 square feet on average, which was what the data showed, which is about the size of a full-size football goal laid down. So there's not that much room.
About the size of this room.
Yeah, so a very small podcast studio, if that helps
anyone.
Imagine
we're all sitting on the same bench.
So they're very much exposed around that additional space in stores.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, it's not just products that are going to be affected by our exit from the EU. There are also regulations that are going to have to change or be replaced or be suspended. I'm sure retailers have heard conflicting things about some of these regulations, and the big one that's been in the press a lot is about track and trace. Can you give us the latest on what's actually happening with this?
Yeah, so on track and trace, this has been an issue that has been a huge frustration for retailers in the way that it's the UK government have attempted to deliver it. What they have said in the event of a no-deal Brexit is that it will be suspended. So 6 to 12 months suspension of the track and trace policy coming forward. But that doesn't mean they're scrapping the policy. And that's a good thing, actually. We think that track and trace is actually a good thing to deal with illicit tobacco.
Yeah.
But it could be modelled better.
And it's something that retailers have already spent a lot of time, a lot of confusion, and you know, for bigger businesses, actually quite a lot of money on making sure they get the codes that they need for this.
So. Sure. So that, but that isn't wasted. It's simply delayed. The UK government will come back. The challenge with the existing scheme is that it has to share data into the European Union, which it couldn't do in the event of no deal. So they'd look to develop a new system that was purely UK-based, but closely running in parallel with what the EU was doing with their track and trace system.
Yeah. And Shane, on your side of the business, is there anything in terms of regulation that the government haven't thought about being EU legislation that we then will have to scrap or replace? Or do you have a track and trace?
We don't have track and trace. Or we have lots of traceability, but not specifically track and trace. The whole point is that Brexit means, in terms of regulatory structures, it means
What does Brexit mean, Shane?
Honestly, after 3 years of talking about it, I definitely know less now than I did 3 years ago. There's no change to the regulatory framework. So the food safety regulations, the traceability requirements will stay the same the day after Brexit than they were, whatever type of Brexit we have.
Okay.
The thing that changes is tariffs and costs.
Sure.
And actually, when I talk about, so this is a very much a logistics point, one of the things that has probably been overlooked is the cost of vehicles. Because the cost of the importing the physical trucks and different sizes and trailers and equipment, that's all going to go up, and that has an inflationary pressure on cost that it's probably not really been thought about in terms of its potential.
So just picking up on that, actually, so are you suggesting then that actually what retailers should be worrying about is not the supply of goods themselves, it's the potential cost increases?
I think. But they need to worry about. But I mean, there's short term, long term. Short term, no deal Brexit is, are there going to be shortages on the shelves?
Yeah.
And the answer to that is, if we had a no deal Brexit, then yes, there will be some degree of shortage.
Okay.
And we have to manage that shortage. In terms of the medium term, the way that the profile of the good, the established norms of what things cost, are going to see inflationary pressure.
Yeah. And I don't want to go on too long about shortages, but Ed, just thinking about convenience stores and where they sit in UK retail. It can be difficult for our members, can't it? Because we're not necessarily at the top of the food chain when it comes to getting these products into stores.
Yeah, so there's a natural sort of hierarchy in the chain, and allocation may be affected in some way under a no deal Brexit. So we have to be conscious and stay close to all the developments as they happen as well.
Yeah.
But retailers should be thinking about the lines that they need to prioritise now as part of their stock management and be prepared to be agile around that and as we run up to Brexit.
And do you think, I mean, Shane, you talked about the regulatory framework in your side of things being basically the same deal or no deal. We know that there are some things, I mean, tobacco packaging and track and trace and a couple of things that government hadn't necessarily thought about ahead of time but are now sort of scrambling to get an answer for. My worry is that there are some of these things that we still don't know about that we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks are a problem. And so in that case, with there being confusion in the event of a no deal and all of these issues, do you think there's a risk that we're possibly going to move to some dodgy product getting into the supply chain and, you know, looking at potentially this sort of, I don't know, something like a second horse meat scandal coming in just because everyone's trying to focus on what this new regime looks like and not, you know, not looking at the core and the quality of the products that are going through?
I mean, the answer to that is yes. I mean, in terms of the single biggest, the plan for no deal from the UK side is let stuff in. There's no more risk on day one, day minus one of no deal. There is day one, so we'll prioritise flow. That's the absolute thing. But that means the checks and places aren't in place in the same way. We're relying on the EU to continue to be our regulator.
Yeah.
In that instance, that's okay for a week. It's okay for a month. It might actually be okay for 6 months. But once you get beyond that, there are going to be holes in the system that could be exploited.
Yeah. So this idea of trying to keep everything looking like business as usual is actually potentially papering over some cracks that are difficult. Yeah.
We shouldn't be too alarmist about that because it is true that the risks aren't going to suddenly transform overnight.
Yeah, and I think the UK government has tried to reassure, as much as Shane is completely right, you know, tariffs and food prices go up, that puts pressure on suppliers, which may make them make difficult decisions. But actually, the government's investing in the National Food Crime Unit. It's investing in talking to regulators and training standards people that look at this because they want to reassure that they will try and keep food regulations and labour market regulations and environmental regulations, not just maintain them, but to enhance them. So I think the UK government is looking at it and conscious of it as well. Yeah.
And I would also say that supply chains aren't quite as agile as we sort of hype them up. You can't switch off one supply of something and turn on another one overnight. It does take a period of transition. That can be quite a quick transition, but that I'm talking weeks and months rather than overnight. And so actually, that we're not expecting things to be radically different,
right,
straight after No Deal than where they are today.
Okay. I guess it's just a period of heightened awareness, I guess, more than anything else. And you've mentioned briefly there, Ed, about labour market. What do we see at ACS, looking at what members' businesses are like, as the impact of a No Deal on the people working and running in stores?
Yeah, so this big piece of the ACS Brexit readiness briefing is around what happens with your workforce and how to support them to look at their employment status in the UK and ultimately start to either apply for settled status or pre-settled status. And you can use that guidance to check that. I think there's also a longer term element of the labour market that people have to be aware of, and that the labour market will tighten post-Brexit in terms of how many people and how much EU labour we rely on in the UK going down. And therefore people having to compete more to get to attract that. And of course, we are, as a convenience sector, competing with lots of other sectors for good employees, whether that's the hospitality sector, and all of us will become under pressure over time. So that ultimately means cost of employment potentially going up and the ability to compete for skilled workers going up as well.
Yeah, and everything I've heard about haulage and freight, this is a much bigger problem for you guys.
Exactly. That's my point. I think, you know, take the problem you have in retail and multiply it by a factor, and that's the problem we have in logistics. The pressure we're already seeing on labour in our market is significant. A lot of the discretionary European labour, or this transient European labour, is already gone because of the pound weakening. And so we are bracing ourselves for quite significant shortages.
So this is the question about shortages, isn't it? Is that the shortage is not just because there are a big queue of trucks that can't get across the border, it's that there might not be anyone who's willing to drive those trucks.
And I thought that's the point I should have made earlier. That to me is the key thing, actually. We talk a lot about shortage of product. The problem won't necessarily be that we won't have enough product. The potentially biggest risk for particularly your end of the market in the convenience sector is availability of vehicles and drivers to get the product out in the event of a crisis. Think about things like a fuel crisis or a snow crisis. That's where the problem happens. It's the physical getting a product from one place to another.
Yeah.
It's not that it's not there, it's just it can't move.
Yeah.
And its movement's the problem.
And we know that a third of the stores in the sector are pretty isolated. They are rural, so it's not like these are going to big centres. There are lots of vans and supplies that, and even getting the product to that nearest cash and carry, I suppose, is going to be a problem, isn't it? Because whether you get your stuff delivered or whether you go to cash and carry, if you're in a pretty rural area, those challenges are the same.
And I guess, the question is, how do you mitigate that? And the problem is literally keep calm and carry on. That is literally the best single action that the general public, general retail base, at different stages of the chain, everyone needs to try not to do unusual behaviour, buy more, panic buy, stockpile at the different levels. Because if you do that, that then puts stress on the whole system. X factor that's probably the single biggest thing you can't control for.
And so the media is going to play an important role in this, because we heard very small things can make a really big difference when it comes to people's behaviour. And like we heard with filling up jerry cans and all that sort of stuff, all it takes is someone saying one thing, and that could cause significant problems and panic buying and all sorts. So
we're very alive to the fact in the logistics sector that the worst thing we can do to stop people to stop people stockpiling is tell people not to stockpile.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like, don't think about elephants and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So is there any? I mean, we talked about lots of different things when it comes to Brexit, and the media has been talking about this pretty much every day for 3 years. Is there anything that's not getting the attention it should be? And it's something that retailers or businesses up the supply chain should be thinking about that they're not?
I think, the whole of Brexit in a way is a complete unknown. It's a complete sort of black swan event, isn't it? So who says there can't be another one further down the line? But I think the thing I'd probably look at for retailers is, in a little bit of a longer term look, what does it mean for competitiveness in the retail sector, for and the impact that has on their businesses? So, you know, if consumers are feeling less confident, have less discretionary spend, they're going to think about where they spend and where they shop. And maybe that drives trend that are already, you know, creating challenges. So more focus on shopping in discount locations or whatever. And equally for the labour market, as we've already mentioned, there's increased competitiveness there. So I think in the general overall retail market, which is quite fragile, you know, we talk a lot about high streets being challenged, them having a bad Christmas isn't going to make that any better, and that's, you know, that's going to be a challenge going in the medium term as well.
Yeah, and Shane, logistics.
I don't think I could think of something that I could put my finger on that says it's the have not to think about. It is literally that point about availability of labour, availability of vehicles, and just making sure that you've kind of got a coherent plan in your mind about how you're going to cope for if we do end up with a bad no deal on the 1st of November.
Yeah, lots of chest freezers.
Now stop planning.
Okay, so finally, I'm going to give you a few quick fire questions, and this is not a test. I will not hold you to your predictions, but others may. I can't be responsible for that. Just to get your gut feeling on what's going to happen over the next few months. So first of all, I'll come to Shane first on this one. Are we leaving without a deal on 31st of October, yes or no?
No.
Ed?
No, but we should prepare as if we are.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, good point.
Second question, I'll go to Ed first. When will we get a general election?
21st of November is my prediction.
Interesting.
I haven't got a better date than that in November, definitely.
So a cold election day. Mm-hmm. Strong. Okay, and then the last one is, will there be a second referendum, Shane?
I don't think there will be.
No, I hope not.
Okay. And all of the problems that a second referendum will bring. Okay, great. Well, thanks both Shane and Ed for joining me on the podcast. If you're a retailer and you're not sure how Brexit might affect you, and hopefully we haven't done too much scaremongering in this podcast, I can highly recommend our guidance on the subject, which is available to download at acs.org.uk. As always, you can keep up to date with the latest information from us on social media at @ACS_local_shops. And please subscribe to the podcast to get episodes straight to your phone before anyone else.